This is HPR episode 2023 entitled, Setting Up My Raspberry Pi 3. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 29 minutes long. The summary is, I bought a RPI 3, a case, a heatsink, and an SSD, and have set the Pi up as a server.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello everyone, this is Dave Morris. I've got a show about the Raspberry Pi today. Just to set the context slightly, today is the day after Hacker Public Radio reached the rather difficult situation where it was running out of shows. There were not going to be any more shows in the queue tomorrow. And I thought I would put this show together in a bit of a hurry in order to try and help fill the gap. Luckily, we've had 7 more shows submitted since that point, but we're still pretty close to the edge, and we're going to fall over that cliff unless we get more submissions. So please, if you can, submit a show. If you listen to Hacker Public Radio, then please contribute if you haven't done so already. Right, my show today is called Setting Up My Raspberry Pi 3, and I bought a Pi 3 in March. It's currently April, and it was soon after it was released. I'm on various alert lists that tell me these things, so I thought I'd grab one while they were available. In fact, they remained available continuously, pretty much, I think. I want to use this Pi as a server since it's the fastest one that I own. I have several others. And so I set it up in what I reckon is the best way for this particular role. And I thought it would be useful if I shared what I did in case you haven't found this sort of information or done this yourself. I'm sure loads of people have. And if that's the case, we'll just hop on to the next show. But in case you haven't, hopefully this might help a little bit. So let me list the hardware that I bought. I've tried to link all of this to various sources in the notes. And there are long show notes with this containing that sort of information. First of all, obviously, the Raspberry Pi Model 3. Then I bought a case, which I like the Pimaroni Pibo cases. This one was called the Ninja because it's in grey. Great names, eh? They're good cases, though. I like them. It's one of these things, if you haven't seen them, it's made from acrylic, and it's built up from multiple layers, laser-cut layers, which you stack on top and below the Pi board itself. And when it's put together, there's enough room inside it to put one of these HAT, H-A-T things, which is a dreadful acronym, which stands for Hardware Attached on Top. But, you know, hat's fine anyway. I don't know if I'm going to put one in here, but I thought if I had a case that could do it, then I'm not going to be disappointed in the future. Apparently this case has got better ventilation than some of the predecessors, which is important for the Raspberry Pi 3. So I also bought a 2.5 amp universal power supply. Most of the ones I've got are lower rated, 2 amp or less. I'll come on to why in a moment. I bought a heatsink. There are 2 varieties I saw. There's a 6mm one, which is what I bought, and I think 7mm. 6mm gives you enough room to put it on the CPU and have room to put a hat on top. And this helps because the Pi is a bit hotter. The Pi 3 is a bit hotter than its predecessors. Now, what I wanted to do was connect a disk to this beast, so I bought a USB to SATA converter. This one's got 2 USB connectors, One you don't really need for the Pi 3, it's for using with other systems that don't produce enough power on a USB. And the other one is obviously the data connection and power. So it's there for, the second one's there for boosting the power from another USB port. I haven't connected it and don't seem to have a problem with it. I bought a SSD. I found the lowest price I could, which ended up being 120 gigs, which I think will be plenty for what I want to do. It would have been nice to have had more, but the prices are still not that low compared to spinning disk, and I wanted to try an SSD rather than a spinning disk. I bought a 32 gig micro SD class 10 card, but on reflection, it's overkill. I'm probably going to swap that out for a smaller one and use 32 gig somewhere else in due course. So let me tell you about what I did to set this up. That's really the meat of this thing, but I'll start with some of the basic things. I installed Raspbian, the latest version, which is Jesse, on the micro SD card. Then I set the Pi up with a monitor and keyboard and a mouse temporarily. I've got an old VGA monitor from years ago, which I use for this, and I've got an HDMI to VGA adapter cable, so I can do this. So I normally configure up my Pis using this, and then most of them are just running headless. In fact, all of them are running headless. So what I normally do, just as a quick list, when I'm setting up a Pi, I allocate it a fixed IP address. I get the MAC address off it, and I go to my router and set it up by MAC address to have a fixed IP within my home LAN. And then I can add that to the various etc. host files on other systems just to make it easier to connect to it. I just call it RPI5. I've actually got six Pis now, including the Pi Zero. I run all my Pis pretty much, well, there's one maybe that's debatable, but I run them directly off the LAN. And I've got a router with a gigabit capability. Most of them are now, I guess, aren't they? I've got various Pis connected either directly to the router, or I've got a bunch of gigabit switches around the house and I connect it to one of them. I make sure I put Vim on the Pi pretty early on because I do not like Nano and I want to be able to use a proper editor when I need to edit anything. I make sure SSH is up and running. That was an issue in the older days, older times, older versions of Raspbian, but it isn't so much now. I think you have to switch it on through Raspi config, but I can't remember whether I did that or not. Anyway, it was running by the time I'd finished. I always create an account on my Pis and fiddle around with the sudoers, editing it with a vi sudo, for which I want vi to be running, vim I should say, to be available. And I use the same account name on all my Pis so I can easily administer them with CSSH, which is a cluster SSH tool. Now I share my SSH key with the Pi so I can just log in to that account without a password. I always either delete the Pi account, the PI account on them, or change its password. And so I just changed the password on this one. Then I made sure that the Pi would boot up in text mode because I want to run it headless. And then I put it where it's going to live, and there we go. Let me tell you about what I wanted to do with the SSD. I wanted to make the system run off the SSD rather than the SD card. I want this to run for long periods of time. I want it to run as a generic server for various tasks. And I want it to be reliable. I don't want to see my SD card getting corrupted or anything like that. So I found out how to do this thing where you run your operating system off the disk. I've actually done this before with another Pi. I've got a Pi 2, and I'd bought a cheapo 1 terabyte disk for that. But I had to power that from a powered USB hub, which I bought for not very much, about £10 or something. And I've got that set up as well. But I think an SSD is going to be better for long-term use, though 1 terabyte is a lot of disk, so it's quite nice to have that. It's going to be doing some backups to that particular machine. But in doing the Pi 2, I used the Adafruit tutorial, which I've linked to in the notes. And this tutorial is based on an article which goes back to 2013. It's available on the Raspberry Pi forums. Again, I've indexed it, written by a guy called Paul V. Just as an aside, while I'm talking about this, pies and cases and stuff, I'd actually bought an aluminium case for the Pi 2. It's got the name of FLIRC, FLIRC, I suppose you say. I like this because it's quite nice looking, and it's very robust, and it's got a heat sink built into it. So there's a heat sink. The case is constructed so this part of it hovers just over the CPU, and there's a pad that you can put on the top of the CPU to connect it on, and so the whole case becomes a heatsink. I would love to have got another one of these. They're a little bit more pricey, but not much. But I don't think I can use it with the Pi 3 because it will block the Wi-Fi and the Bluetooth. And I quite like to have those available, even though I'm not using the Wi-Fi at the moment. I haven't tried it out, and I can't find confirmation that this would be a problem, but I've heard several people suggest that you do not put a Pi 3 in a metal case. Anyway, let's get back to the Adafruit tutorial. So what I did was I set everything up with the SSD connected through the SATA connector, and then I went to the Pi and SSH to it, in fact, to determine what device my SSD was connected to. Found it was actually on /dev/sda1. I used dmessage to find this. I grabbed the Adafruit code, which is on GitHub. I think you can get it off a repository, but it's the Adafruit repository, and I couldn't be bothered to set that up. So I just did a git clone, which I've put in the notes. You'll find it in the tutorial. The tutorial's great, but I thought it would be useful if I did a show on it. Then I simply ran the script that comes in from the Git repository. It's basically this, just a script and some stuff for configuring it all up as a Debian package. So I just cd'd to the directory which had been created by the Adafruit Git repository, and with sudo ran the script, which is called adafruit-pi-external-root-helper. You have to give it a -d and the name of the device, not the name of the partition, SDA1, the name of the device, /dev/SDA in my case. And ran that and rebooted the Pi, and it was all done. So it's pretty simple. Now, you could now, if you want to do this, you can just go with our tutorial, follow it, and you'll be good to go. But what I've done in this particular show is I've just drilled down into the script to explain what it does. I wanted to know what it did. And it's bash script, and it's very nicely written. And I thought I'd just share what I found by going through it and describing the actions, none of which are really world-shattering, but it's useful to know, especially if you want to modify it in any way or undo what you've done or anything of that sort. So it has to be run as root because it's going to do some low-level stuff with the disk and stuff. It's available, the script's available under an MIT license, so I have included a copy on the HBR site so that you can have a look at it and check it out as I describe it. And as I've said in the notes, if you're not interested, you can just skip to the end. So the script starts by ensuring that all the necessary packages have been installed. It's actually quite nicely put together, this script. It's using various functions which report messages with a piece of coloured text on the front of them. It's really nice to look at on a colour terminal. It wants to make sure that the packages that it needs are available. It uses apt-get to install them. So I guess that's going to restrict it to running on a Debian system, which I'm not sure if it's actually been stated that that's a restriction, but there you go. Didn't actually follow that through to see if there were other versions of it. It wouldn't be very hard to modify it to something else. Anyway, the packages it wants are gdisk, rsync, and parted. It then uses the parted tool. I'd never come across this before. It's actually really nice. It's a way of letting you script various disk functions. And it makes a partition table type GPT. And then it makes a primary partition of type EXT4 on the disk. Okay, so as it does this, it's actually going to zap the disk. It's going to completely obliterate anything that currently exists on that disk. Then it does a makefs, mkfs, to build an EXT4 file system on that partition, and it calls it rootfs. Then it uses a tool called blk id, I call it, because it needs to know the UUID for the partition. This is an interesting tool, actually. When you call it in the way that's being used in the script, which is blkid minus o space export and then the name of the partition, when you do that, it returns a list of information about the partition you're pointing it at. And but it does it in the format key equals value. There's a bunch of these. You can just run it. It doesn't change anything. You can run it and see how it works if you want to. That's what I did when I was writing these notes. Now, what it does is the script encapsulated this call to blkid with an eval call. So it's actually a command substitution. I'm saying all this because I'm assuming you've been listening to some of my other shows and know what I'm talking about. This command substitution is an argument to the eval capability of Bash. So what that does is it takes all of the stuff that's returned by the command, the block ID command, and it executes it as if it's a bunch of Bash commands. And the Bash commands will be things like key equals value. So one of them is UUID equals and then the value of the UUID. So what that then does is it's in the environment, it creates a variable called UUID in capitals and it sets it to that value. So once that's called, you will have these various values set. There's a bunch of other ones, but you'll have them all set. And then the script stores the variable UUID into its own variable, which is called target partition UUID. So that's a clever piece of Bash stuff, which I have not covered in any of my shows yet, but will do in due course. Now the script then has to get the thing called the partition unique GUID from the device. So there are these two values, there's the UUID and then there's this GUID. This is needed to make the boot sequence use this disk rather than the SD card. And it does this by sending a command to the GDisk utility. The command it's sending is simply the letter I, which is asking for partition information. So GDisk is followed by the name of the device. And in the output that comes back, there will be a line beginning with partition unique GUID colon. And there's a pipeline that's set up which searches for that string with grep. And the fourth element, which is the actual GUID value, is extracted with awk. And the result of all this is that a variable called partition unique GUID is set to that GUID. So this is another case of doing it in a command substitution. So the line is export partition hyphen underscore unique underscore GUID equals, and then the command substitution echo letter I to GDisk blah blah blah. I won't read it all out in detail. You can see it if you want to examine it closely. It's on line 120 of the script. I didn't number the copy, but I'm sure you'll be able to do that for yourself. So by this point, the script has determined the partition UUID and the GUID, which are two values that it needs for the next stage. And it reports these in lines 122 and 123. The next thing it does is to mount the new partition that's been created, and it mounts it against a mount point called slash MNT, which I assume already exists because mount doesn't usually create mount points for you. I imagine that it always gets created automatically by Raspbian. It's there as part of the Raspbian setup. Didn't actually look at that personally, but anyway, having mounted the disk, you know, it's now made everything, collected information about it, and it's mounted it. Then it uses rsync to simply copy everything under the root directory, which is the slash directory on the SD card, to /mnt on the external disk. And this is not quick because, first of all, SD cards are not particularly fast, and it's there's a lot of files there in the entirety of a Raspbian system. In my case, I installed full Raspbian, so it means there was a fair amount. Pretty much the entirety of the Raspbian system is being copied across to the hard disk or the SSD or whatever. And then the script edits the file /boot/cmdline.txt, command line.txt, and it first of all makes a backup copy called /boot/commandline.txt.bak. It just uses a cp to do that. Then it uses sed to edit it. But I made the note that, being slightly a bit of a smart aleck here, but it's using sed to do the edit. It could have done the edit and the backup in the same command, which you will know if you have been following my sed series, I said. So, okay. You can slap me about the head another time. Anyway, the sed command changes the definition of the root device in this command line.txt file to the disk rather than to the SD card. And it sets an extra value called root delay equals 5, which is a 5-second delay for the disk to become ready. The comments there in the script say that the author's not sure if this is really necessary. I haven't experimented with shorter ones. Certainly seen people recommend something like a 2-second delay. In my case, with an SSD, I would imagine there's very little delay. That's probably a delay for the disk to spin up, I would have thought. You ain't going to have no spinning when it comes to an SSD, so I shall tune that at some stage. The sed command, which is online, let me just look, it's on line 135 of the script. It uses the -i command line option to do an edit in place. And that's the point at which you could have generated the backup, as you will know, etc., etc. Advertising my sed series, of course. Now, notice, here's an interesting thing, because I have not done this in the sed series I've been doing. The command, which is an S command, is enclosed in double quotes. I've been enclosing things in single quotes because that's the safest thing to do, but this one's enclosed in double quotes because there's a reference to a variable substitution in there, and you can't do variable substitutions in single quotes. So what he wants to do is to substitute in the value of partition underscore unique underscore GUID that was fished out earlier on, and that value has to be plugged into this file. Interestingly, so he's done it in double quotes, which will achieve that particular necessity. That's actually something that sort of will come out of my series about the whole expansion process within Bash, just in case you're interested. So notice that the author has escaped the slashes in the S command. He's looking for the sequence /dev/mcblk0p2, which is the name of the partition on the SD card, and he's put escapes, he's put backslashes in front of the slashes, but he's used the vertical bar delimiter to the S command, so you don't need to escape. You needed to do that if you used slashes as your delimiter. So, just me being picky. So once all that's happened, then your command line's been updated to point the right place, and the next thing the script does is to edit etc. fs tab. I should have said that the command line thing, the boot command line, is the actual command that's invoked during the boot process that gives the boot process information about where to get the rest of the code to be running to start up your Raspberry Pi. Etc. /fstab is a file that is used by the starting Linux system to mount any devices that are necessary. So in the original one, there will have been an entry for the root partition on the SD card. So we want to point that instead at the equivalent on the hard disk. So the sequence here is that a sed command is run against the copy of the FS tab, which is under slash mount. So it's slash mnt slash etc. slash FS tab. We're editing that, and it comments out the line containing the SD card partition, and it looks for a line beginning that contains mmcblk0p2, puts a hash mark on the front with a nice piece of sed, edits that in place, of course. Then it echoes the new line to the end of the file, and this is a line which contains a parameter substitution, so it's in double quotes, and the thing that being substituted, my mouth is saying what I'm looking at, so I have to be careful. The thing that's substituted in there is the UUID that we collected earlier on. So it's making a line that says slash dev slash disk slash by hyphen UUID slash, then the UUID value that we collected, and then the rest of it. I won't read it all out. And it appends that to the end of the etc. FS tab copy. So once that's done, everything is finished, and the script simply prompts you to check to see if you want what happened, and go and look at the files that have been changed, which are simply this command line slash boot slash command line dot text and slash mnt slash etc. fs tab. And once you're happy, just reboot. So I obviously did this, and I captured a transcript of what went on. And I do this just for my own records, really. Stick it into my wiki where I keep all sorts of stuff. And so I thought I'd just stick this into the collection of files for these notes. So there's a link to it in the notes. I didn't actually do exactly the way that the tutorial recommends. I normally su to root and just run everything as root rather than using sudo all the time. But that's just my own personal foible. One thing that I also followed up with was, if you set up such a thing and for some reason or other you wanted to revert, how would you do it? Obviously you could just generate a new SD card and bung that in and everything's good to go. You can also edit the slash boot slash command line dot txt on the SD card, because that's really the only thing that's left on the SD card that is particularly important in this process. Anyway, we've got a backup there, so you can just simply revert by replacing the change file with the backup. Of course, since any updates and changes and installations and so forth that you might have done will be done on the external disk if this happens sometime afterwards, then those will disappear because they're on the disk and you've just set things up to boot off the SD card. So you'd have to reapply them or do something clever to copy them across. But I've never wanted to do this sort of reversion, I have to say, but you know, it's useful in case you ever do, to understand what you could do. So I'm finishing off then with a picture of my little corner, which contains three Raspberry Pis, one of which is in the metal case with a powered USB hub and a disk, and another of which is the latest Pi 3, the one at the front actually. You can see the SSD connected to it, and it's even got my little 8-port gigabit switch alongside. So you can pick those up, by the way, for quite small amounts of money on eBay, which is why I've got several of them. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. It's just me really telling you about something that you could have worked out for yourself, but sometimes it's useful if somebody else points you in the direction. And I thought it would be useful just to look at what was entailed in making this change, just in case it all looked too mysterious, etc., etc. So hopefully you found that useful, and speak to you next time. Okay, bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.